Get 12 weeks of The Spectator in print and online for just £12. And we'll give you a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Katie Bors and James Forsyth. So there's one thing on everyone's mind in Westminster at the moment, and that's the idea of a second wave. Transport Secretary Grant Shapps has arrived back in London today from his cut-short Spanish holiday. James, how serious are the risks here?
So I think when people talked about a second wave or a second spike, the thought was that this would come in the autumn, which has come earlier than people expected. Now, some people say this isn't a second spike, this is just a return of the first wave of social distancing measures are eased. But I think, as Katie says in her excellent politics column in the magazine this week, what we are seeing from Boris Johnson is a demonstration that he really is prepared to put the handbrake on at speed when he thinks it's necessary. But I think there is a danger for him here, which is the danger of politicians is that is that they always overcorrect for their previous errors. Now, if you think back to the interview that Boris Johnson gave on Friday to the BBC to mark a year in Downing Street, he essentially accepted that the government had been too slow to realise how serious coronavirus was, and he opened up the discussion about whether the government had been too slow to order a full national lockdown. I think you now see the government going almost the other way. So it's not just, I think, the measures taken about Spain, which you look at the spiking cases, you know, you can make a case for. It's the fact that they've decided to include the Canary Islands, which are quite some way off the coast of Spain, although legally Spanish territory, in this bar, and the Canary Islands aren't seeing a spike. I think you just see a willingness to use dramatic state action quickly. Now, I mean, the interesting thing is this, kind of ringing around Tory MPs this afternoon, those on the libertarian wing of the party are particularly head in hands. I think those who've got holidays booked abroad are also particularly head in hand, to be honest.
Yeah.
And I'm feeling very smug about my 2 weeks in Devon. But I think this is an interesting question here, because come September, schools are meant to reopen. Now, in terms of primary schools, I think that's not particularly, I don't think Sage will be particularly worried about primary schools. But secondary schools is obviously a big issue potentially, because teenagers are sociable both in school and out of school. And I do wonder whether we're heading towards a situation where Sage starts saying, okay, Prime Minister, you really want to open those schools up? Tell me what you're going to shut down. How are you going to make your R budget work? And so I think we are already into the political debate in the autumn that ministers feared being into. And it's still only July. I mean, it is remarkable.
Katie, is there a risk that the government is overcorrecting? And in recent weeks, it has seemed like the government has departed from the scientists on problems like face masks or whatever it is. So now they're going to have to go back to sticking to the science very closely.
Well, I think someone in government was saying to me the Prime Minister just goes between the two crises, ultimately switching at one point really worried about the economy, then you give it a week really worried about health. And in a way, this is, I don't even meant as a criticism. The point is you have two separate, really difficult problems. As soon as you start fixing one, the other one gets worse. That is the nature of it. If you were going to have an economy like the one that we are used to, that is functioning, then ultimately relaxing social distancing helps that. But as soon as you do that, you increase the risk of the public health crisis. So I think it's almost as soon as you're stopping one fire out, the other one gets worse. And I think that's what we're seeing to a degree here. There has been a real worry about the economy over the past month or so. So there's a big effort. And now it's saying, well, what is the effect of that going to be? I do think if you look at the Daily Mail front page today saying the Prime Minister is worried that in 2 weeks we could have a second wave here because of an uptick. Now, I think they're in part saying, I think we've got to define what a second wave is. Mm. My sense is still that what figures in government are much more worried about is not what happens in a fortnight's time. It is about what happens in autumn and winter. And I think that partly that intervention, you don't feel as though people are unhappy with that story getting out there, is to try and remind people that although things have been relaxed, do not get too lax. And I think there is a bit of that going on here. So there is a rise in cases. Ross Clark has an interesting blog on Coffee House today saying there's a rise in cases. There's not yet that rise in fatalities. Mm. So how are you defining a second wave? But I think part of what's happening here is the government is trying to remind people that, you know, the risk has not gone away. If we do get too relaxed, if, you know, you do go to a restaurant but you don't follow the guidance around it, then we could start to get in a very difficult situation very quickly. So although I think people are worried about a second wave, I still think, generally speaking, it's the medium term they're more concerned. But if you can try and get people to go for that behaviour, then it fixes it sooner. But I think, again, it just gets back to this main issue, which is the government on one hand is trying to encourage people to have confidence to go out and spend, but on the other hand is now telling people to be more careful. And it's really hard to sense that we're going to get any way back to some normality this year because those two messages are conflicting.
James, it is a tough time to be putting the government's message out there because it's the way, isn't it? I mean, we're in the few days run up to 3rd of August, which is when Eat Out to Help Out will start. At the same time, there's this fear about a second wave coming. So, should people spend or should they go out or should they not go out?
There's a challenge even earlier than that for the government, which is in that Boris Johnson speech when he set out how he hoped that all social distancing measures might end by November. It was announced that from the 1st of August, the advice on the use of public transport would change. And that your employers should speak to their workers. And if everyone feels that the office can, you know, be done with adequate hand san and social distancing, come back to work. You know, is that still going to happen? I mean, it's an interesting question here. I think it'd be interesting to see how hard the government pushes, for example, to get civil servants back to work. You know, at the time of that Boris Johnson speech, there was quite a bit of briefing about, you know, look, if you want to get Zone 1 in London going again, you know, you've got to get civil servants back to work on Whitehall. I wonder whether how hard they're going to push that in the current circumstances with the current concerns about an uptick in the virus. I think this is a reminder that this virus isn't going to go away. And I mean the political debates about how to deal with it are going to become more intense because as people realise how long it is going to be around for, people will start to say, well, hang on a second, we can't stay indoors for all that time. And other people say, no. As soon as you ease things off, the spike comes back. I think it puts even more pressure than before on a vaccine that can at least alleviate the symptoms to make people more relaxed. And I think you see the way the government keeps buying up, you know, today another 60 million doses of another vaccine that hasn't yet been proven to be effective shows you how much the government has riding on a hope of a vaccine. Because at the moment, right now, it's the only thing you can see that resolves that tension that Katie was just talking about.
And Katie, also looking towards the next phase of this crisis is the Chancellor Rishi Sunak, who you write about in your Guardian column today. What is the problem that he's got on his hands with regard to the coming months?
I think he's got quite a lot of problems.
Name one.
Well, if you just look at the sheer level of borrowing the government has undertaken so far, the furlough scheme is being wound down. I think there is a strong sense, and we've heard this directly from the Chancellor too, but there's a sense that you cannot continue the furlough scheme beyond. I don't think anyone in the Treasury wants to see the furlough scheme brought back. That means you have to effectively avoid a national lockdown, which everyone does want to avoid. But the issue for Rishi Sunak is the immediate problem is he needs to try and get the economy functioning again in some form. But I think one of the things that I think is quite interesting is there is a concern in government, there is a disconnect when it comes to Tory MPs between money spent and money that needs to be paid back. So we're heading to a period outside, I think, what the Treasury see as the emergency period, where they expect there to be less spending. But if you look at all the money spent already, that has to be accounted for some way later down the line. And I think there is a concern that not all MPs appreciate that. Some of them see it as a matter closed. You know, we've done that, now we move on. And I think every week now we're hearing about various tax rises that are being considered. Now, this is a balancing act in the sense that the autumn budget still has to be focused on trying to get growth, you know, increase and stimulate the economy. But I think we could see a tax rise or two in it potentially. Definitely later down the line, you've had Rishi Sunak saying he wants to balance the books in the medium term. But what tax is this Tory party going to go for? And I think the problem is, even those Tory MPs who do accept that you might need a targeted tax rise have very different opinions on which type of voter or which type of individual should carry the burden for that. So the Red Wall MPs really, I think, would be very reluctant for anything on cost of living. So issues like hospital car parking, free school meals, they feel like that affects their constituents quite heavily. But then you have, I think, more traditional seats represented by Tory MPs that have long been Tory, and they think in a way, why does the party want to bash the reliable Tory voter? It tends to be older, more affluent, when particularly, you know, they've had a difficult time because of coronavirus too. So I think that's the division we're going to hear more about.
And James, right on cue, obesity campaigners have today called for an extension to the eligibility of free school meals under the thought that they're much healthier for children. But this is probably the sort of spending that the government doesn't want to add to its bill post-coronavirus.
I think there's an amazing stat in that, but only 1% of packed lunches meet the nutritional value of a free school meal. And I think we can debate whether all kids should get free school meals or not, you know, and whether that's a sensible use of public money, or, you know, should those parents who can afford it be billed for it. But I also think it's a massive reminder we need to, that somehow, I think this is kind of, we get back to one of my regular favourite hobby horses, we need far more education about food in this country. And we need to learn to go back to appreciating the joys and glories of cooking and making things yourself. And not kind of, I think one of the great delusions of modern times is that you can put things in the microwave for 2.5 minutes and it saves you all this time, and there are no trade-offs. There are obviously trade-offs involved because of stuff that comes out of the microwave is less healthy than stuff that people have made themselves. And I think this doesn't solve the problem that Katie is talking about in her column, because it takes time. But I think the most sensible approach of a centre-right right now is to try and reduce the demand for government. Now, this is obviously not something that's going to deliver an immediate result, but greater education about how to cook and a cultural shift on that, I think, will probably do more to bring down obesity than almost anything else.
James and Katie, thanks very much, and join us again tomorrow.
Get 12 weeks of The Spectator in print and online for just £12. And we'll give you a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.